What do you think? All right. Guess what? To salve your disappointment, not having a really guest speaker, I have handouts. So if I could have handouters. You can sub. Y'all don't fight. I'm going to get a podium while all this is happening. Could you tell it was me when I had the mask on? I have to work on that. We have a little booklet here for through Wednesday and an extra bonus lesson. And so the topics are here. Contrast of covenants. Baptism for remission of sins. Uncommon music. The Lord's Supper. And church organization. And I have as my title, Uncommon Understandings. But my subtitle is, A Look at Some Uncommon Truths That Are Common in the Bible. So one of the things that we in Churches of Christ try to do is look at what it was supposed to be like back when Jesus built the church. And, I mean, anytime you got people involved with anything, what happens? After a while, well, you know, things begin to sort of, this person wants that, that person wants that, that person wants something else, and next thing you know, you got a little bit of this, a little bit of that. And look at what's going on today. As far as really generally recognized, having some credibility, some presence, some something or other, there are about 20,000 different groups in what we call Christendom many times. And they're all at least a little bit different. There wouldn't be different groups if there weren't a little bit different. And so when Jesus prays in John 17 that he wants everyone to be one, even as he and the Father are one, then something must have gone wrong. So how do we fix it? We try to figure out what it was supposed to be back in the day and then do it again. So that's what we want to look at. Now, we sometimes call this the restoration principle. It's sort of like if you got a car and you want to restore it to what it was, what would you do? Then it's all right for y'all to talk. But you don't have to if you don't want to. Look at the original design, okay? If you really take it seriously, you're trying to find original parts, don't you? I mean, if you really, really, really want to, so that whatever it is that you've got now, like a 52 Plymouth, this is what a 52 Plymouth would have been in 1952, okay? So you have to kind of go, you have to go back and have a reference point, 1952. Okay, where's our Corvette man? Where are you? Oh, there you are, hiding. Okay. Now, Corvette's going to do a new Corvette, right? But when people found out they were doing a new Corvette, they all of a sudden wanted the last model. So what's the last model?
C7.
C7.
Eighth generation.
Eighth generation. Okay.
First was 1953.
Going back to 53.
That was the C1.
Okay. What did they use on Route 66? Remember that?
It actually
did
the car change to the new model?
Mysteriously changed. Nobody knows how that happened. It's TV, right? Okay. Even the Corvette people didn't know what happened. Okay, so people want this model because it's the last of its kind. Right? Say yes.
Well,
don't get into a bunch of technical Corvette stuff with me. Almost.
Some of them prefer space. And
okay. Before it changes, they want to get in because they like the way it is right now. Okay, then.
Yes,
what he said was what I was saying. What about church? Hey, let me ask you this. How many of you think that most people that you know in that 20,000 group of different things. How many people do you think even think about maybe let's go back and see what it used to be? Give me a percentage. This is highly unscientific. But you're out there in the field and you have a sense, right? Right.
10 or less.
Huh?
10 or less.
10 or less percent. Maybe even think about, maybe we should look at what it used to be. Okay. Don't let the cape and shirt and mask keep you quiet. I'm harmless.
Let me ask you this. Mm-hmm.
Good question when you're studying with somebody. Just like their eyes go, whoa. How many churches did Christ establish?
And
one, right? So that's not a complicated question. And everybody knows there's a bunch of different stuff going on. And back then, there wasn't a lot of different stuff going on. So just plant the seed, plant the idea about that. That's what we're trying to do. And the first thing that we need to do before we really look at that in any kind of detail is about covenants, right? Now, here's another thing. How many people do you think out in Christendom have some thinking about, well, there's the Old Testament, there's the New Testament, and there's a division between the two, and we're under the new, not the old? How many people do you think really think like that? Take a wild guess. Half, maybe? Pardon? Most? Most? Okay. Where does it tend to break down, even people who are in the most category of, you know, yeah, there's the old covenant, there's the new covenant. Where does that tend to break down in practical reality? Where there's, you know, a little grab back into the old. I could be talking about anything. Yes, that could be one thing. What do people often want to bring forward from back there? We'll have a lesson on it. Instrumental music. Okay. And oftentimes when people learn that, hey, you guys don't use instruments of music in your worship, or sometimes they'll put it this way, y'all don't believe in music, which we do, but that idea that y'all don't believe, and it's kind of like an epiphany. People will visit with us, it may take a time or two, and it's like, wait a minute, y'all aren't using instruments, okay? And invariably, somebody said, well, they used to use them, right? Psalms talk about them. Old Testament talks about it, right? And now, okay, Jerry? Okay, part of it. Okay, you have sometimes people who will have enough people to where we'll have this service where we will and this service where we won't. But it would be a legitimate question with that or anything else, would it not? Well, what did they used to do back then? What was going on? And how did they know what to do? And how would we know what to do? So those are some questions that we'll look at with things like instrumental music. Because today, I had an eye doctor. I called him my eye guy. Back in Carnes, he and his wife had a practice, and Sarah's doctor was his wife, and I had him. He is a very good tennis player. All his kids play tennis. They win all kinds of awards. He's a fascinating fellow. So he's attending a group that not only used instruments, used a ton of them. Like, wow. And so when he found out I was a member at Carnes, Church of Christ, he had a lot of patients that were members. And so he said, hey, why don't y'all use instruments? With a gleam in his eye and a sort of a grin on his face. He said, I know what you're going to tell me. Ephesians 5:19, Colossians 3:16. Ha ha! And I said, no, I'm not. The reason I mention him, we developed a dialogue. We're still talking. And of all things, I do the sermon on my Facebook page. And guess who listened to it this morning? Shane Preston, my eye guy. So we still have some level of contact. But those are questions that people have a right to ask. They have a right to ask us to defend our position. We have a right to say, well, why do you use them? Because it's not a matter of indifference. In the Old Testament, there were commands, and folks did it for that reason. So, what about covenants, okay? The covenant that we're under. Let's have a look at lesson one, shall we? and some things here that I think are very important. Contrast of the covenants. It's not just, though it is, it's not just that there's an old covenant and a new covenant. That's true. But it's not just that. There are a lot of differences between the Old Testament and the New Testament, the Old Covenant and the New Covenant, right? For instance, if you look at the size of the Old Covenant versus the size of the New Covenant, what do you immediately notice? I hope. Okay, we're getting the international symbol for bigger and smaller. Okay, yes, the Old Testament, New Testament. Okay, yes. Yes. I'm talking to you, Russell.
History?
Mm-hmm.
It gives us the character of God.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to understand.
Okay. It helps us to have a context for the new. The new comes out of the old. Let me ask you some specific questions about that. Are there a lot more do's and don'ts in the old covenant than the new? Yes. Yes. What? Where? Oh, the Corvette guy, yes. Okay. Much more letter. Mm-hmm. There were bigger checklists under the old covenant. Tremendously so. Okay.
Okay.
We're getting dangerously close to what I'm looking for, but we haven't gotten there yet. Dangerously close. Maybe that close. Right. He's not under the old covenant.
You don't hear us being God.
That's true.
They didn't have a priesthood.
Mm-hmm.
They
did what God told them to do. Yeah.
After
the patriarch. For instance, patriarchs used to be priests for their families. Now we don't have family priests anymore. Okay. There were things in the Old Testament. Once they were gone, they're gone. I want us to look at one aspect of that, and we can look at it. The book of Hebrews. What's going on in the book of Hebrews? Why is the book of Hebrews something we might want to talk about while we're having this discussion?
Superiority of Jesus.
Who said that? Okay. Superiority of the new covenant in Christ over Moses and the old law, right? Andrew? Same thing? Ditto? Okay. So, I want you to look for something in the first part of chapter 10 and a little bit down in chapter 8 that's the same thing, only different. First part of chapter 10, Hebrews, into chapter 8 just a little bit, right, maybe six verses. And I want you to tell me what's going on there. What is the Hebrews writer, under the inspiration of the Holy Spirit, telling these Jews who were under the law of Moses, who have become Christians and who are being lured into going back to the old covenant? What is he telling them about the nature of the old covenant that's very fundamental for us to understand? Chapter 10, do you see anything about types and shadows in there in 8 and 10? 10:1, that's right at the top of chapter 10.
We're having a shadowy image.
The shadow of good things to come, but not the very image, okay? Do you see anything in chapter 8 that says essentially the same thing? This is where we display to our visitors our uncanny skills at looking stuff up. If you have a cross-reference Bible, you can even cheat. What does 8:5 say? Who serve a copy and shadow of heavenly things. So they're a copy and a shadow with regard to heavenly things they represent. They're a copy and shadow of the New Testament things that are going to come later. So, shadow. Okay, so as you run down through chapter 8, he has a big quotation from Jeremiah 31 about God promised under Jeremiah, chapter 31, that there was going to be a new covenant. And he says that new covenant isn't going to be like the old covenant. What does that tell us? It's not going to be like the old covenant. They're going to be different. So we're looking for differences. We're looking for things that are going to give substance to the shadows. Okay. Yes.
Jesus is where he said, you have heard it say. And he went from the action, not lust, not angry without a cause.
Mm-hmm.
So he didn't, things are bad or wrong.
No, no.
But he said, I'm commanding more of
them. Yes.
And then it comes from your heart.
He's fulfilling them. Okay, so one of the things, and that's a key point there, one of the things about the Old Covenant, because if you look at the Sermon on the Mount, just look at it. If you got a reference Bible, you're going to find all kinds of Old Testament references. Because it's not that that stuff wasn't there, but it tended to get lost in all the rules and all the regulations and all to do this and all to do that. And anybody eating a catfish lately? And if not, why not? A little Chinese place over here. It's got some really good catfish, doesn't it? Guess what? If you were under the law of Moses, would you be eating catfish? Well, you shouldn't. And you can't eat camels either, but that's probably not near the problem that catfish are. So how many dietary rules and regulations are there? How many clean and unclean regulations are there? I mean, boom, 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 boom. They're all over the place, right? Do you see that same kind of thing in the New Testament? It isn't that the Old Testament didn't have any heart matters. The two great commandments come from there. But I have so many things that are outward in nature that, and the Pharisees, 5:20 of Matthew's Sermon on the Mount, except your righteousness exceed that of the scribes and the Pharisees, you shall no wise enter the kingdom of heaven. So they had taken things and they had made them very, you know, wash your hands this way and do this and do that. And, you know, so you won't break this commandment, let's do this. And so you really don't break it, let's do that. And hey, how about we got another thing over here we do to make sure we don't break this commandment. Next thing you know, people don't even remember what the commandments were. Sabbath, the classic example. How many times did Jesus get into trouble on the Sabbath? Like pretty much every Sabbath that we read about, right? By people who are telling him he's breaking the law. Yeah, the guy is told, take up your pallet and walk. It's like, well, if that's not breaking the Sabbath, I don't know what is. But it wasn't. Because Jesus understood what that commandment was about and what it wasn't about. If you look at the Babylonian Talmud, which is an accumulation of when the Jews got around to writing down their oral Torah. The oral Torah was there when Jesus was there. And they start writing it down between 400 and 900 AD, 400 and 900. If you look at it on a shelf, you got like this much, which is a lot bigger than the Old Testament, right?
Right.
And about that much of it are Sabbath laws. You know what would be really dangerous for you ladies to do? On the Sabbath. In fact, the Pharisees decided they'd help you with this. Don't look in a mirror. You know why? I don't have to worry about this. Hint, hint. You might see something on your shoulder. What? Ladies. With hair. A hair. And what you going to be tempted to do? Oh, broke the Sabbath. Worked on the Sabbath. Moved a hair from your shoulder on the Sabbath. I'm serious. You can't make this up. Now, how enjoyable do you think the Sabbath was going to be when you've got this much legislation telling you what not to do? Well, you're going to be miserable. Did God intend for the Sabbath to be a day of misery? No, what did he intend for it to be? A day of celebration, a day of rest, a day of enjoyment. But everybody's paranoid. Now, how much attention did Jesus give to the ceremonial laws for the Sabbath? How much of that did he say, oh, yeah, we need to do that? How much of that did he do? Zero. So not only does the Old Testament have a lot of laws, a lot more than the New Testament has, about meticulous things like dietary laws and clean and unclean. What if you walked over a grave? You ever done that? It's hard not to if you're going to a funeral in a cemetery, right? Unclean. Walked over a corpse. Sorry. Wow. So Not only did the Old Testament have tons of rules and regulations about what we might consider to be minutia, but once you get into that, it sort of starts a frenzy of, well, we can add some more and we'll be even more righteous, and then some more and some more and some more and some more. Like the don't take the hair off your shoulder. In Exodus 3 and Exodus 6, we have Moses, as God is renewing his relationship with Israel after they've been in bondage for 430 years, and he's telling him, I want you to go talk to Pharaoh, and I want you to tell him to let my people go. Remember that? I'm sure he did. Where does he first encounter God? Where does he see first to get him, get his attention? Burning bush, not being consumed. That's it. Now, Moses has a problem. He's basically skittish is his problem, and he would rather somebody else do it, i.e. Aaron. So he comes up with excuses. So being a person that was raised in Egypt, where there's a God and God is for everything, and if you were going to talk about anything, you'd have to associate it with whatever God or goddess was appropriate. In fact, when we go further up and we get into the New Testament, and we have the Greeks and their idols, and the Greek gods and goddesses, the Romans are just the same thing with different names. In chapter 17 of Acts, Paul's wandering around down below before he goes up on the Areopagus, Mars Hill, and he sees an altar to the unknown God. They got hundreds of gods and goddesses. Why would they have an unknown God shrine? Because they were afraid they might be leaving somebody out. And if they had, and that's what Paul does, he says, let me tell you about that one. It's the only one there is. But that association with gods and goddesses, parceling out everything that happens in life. And so Moses said, when I go and I talk to Pharaoh and I say, let my people go, he's going to ask, what's the name of your God, right? Who are you representing? And what does God tell him? I am who I am. Tell him, I am has sent you. So when we get started with this, and we start talking about how are we going to deal with God, how are we going to revive this interest, how are we going to get Israel, kind of back in line and get them where they need to be, and how are we going to deal with Pharaoh, and how are we going to do all this, one of the first things he does is he establishes who God is. And at the end of the day, that's what we're talking about with regard to covenants. Who makes covenants? Who gives covenants? Who makes the rules? Who said so? I want you to tell me who's telling you to do this. And in our case, in the old covenant, it was God. It was the I Am. In the new covenant, guess what? Have we changed? Does God say, I don't really have an interest in this anymore? Jesus, who is God with us, is the one who's making the covenant, right? So if we're going to know, like if an Egyptian wanted to know something, what did they do? They consulted a priest for that god or goddess. Maybe offered a little bit of incense or something like that in order to get maybe a favorable crop situation with rain or whatever. There's a particular god or goddess that you call on. Now, what happened? We're talking about how things kind of get crazy after Jesus set up the church. Who knows? Does anybody remember? It kind of fallen out of favor, but when I was a kid, everybody, their dog had one of these things. A St. Christopher medal. Remember that? Anybody remember that? You young people, you don't know what you're missing. That was the cool thing to do, was have a St. Christopher medal around your neck. So what was St. Christopher? Why St. Christopher? Why not one of the other myriad of saints and whatnot? Why St. Christopher? What was his deal? Travelers. Do you travel? Yeah, all the time. Handy saint to have around. And there were saints for everything. And so if you were going to consult, you went to the saint first. And that just is going back to like what was going on in Egypt? Well, you go to this one, you go to that one, you go to the other one. Or Mars Hill, you go to this one, you go to that one, you go to the other one. And instead of what the New Testament teaches, there is how many mediators between God and man? One. Paul writes that to Timothy. There's one mediator between God and man, the man Jesus Christ. So if there's one, who do we need to listen to? Jesus. And that's what the Hebrews writer is saying. And he goes all through Hebrews saying, it's Jesus, it's Jesus, it's not Moses anymore, it's not the law anymore, it's not angels, it's not anything. It's Jesus. And if it's not him, then we miss. And so one of the things we need to just get in our head, what does Jesus say about this? Does he have anything to say about it? Is it a matter that he's spoken on? Is it something that he's let us know what he wants to do? Or is it a matter of indifference? Like, should you drink with the right hand or the left hand? He doesn't care. I'm ambi, so I drink with my left hand. But he doesn't care. So how am I going to find out what he cares about? I'm not going to look in the Old Testament, am I? He's not going to tell me how to be a Christian in the Old Testament. There weren't any Christians. He wasn't a Christian. I can learn about how to live a godly life and ethical principles and how to treat people and how to be devoted to God. I can learn all that stuff through Jesus' life, living as a Jew. But when it comes to after Jesus died, we got a different deal. So what does Jesus look like in the church? When we look at the mind of Christ and say, okay, now what do you want for this new thing? What do you want for the church? How do we do business now? We are on notice that there have been changes. We're on notice that types and shadows are going to be given substance. We're looking for it. We don't want to look over there in the Old Testament to figure it out. We want to look in the New Testament to figure it out. Now, the book of Hebrews is all about that. And so covenant change is important. Now, look at the end of Romans chapter 5, please. Paul's going to be talking about what, in a small part, what we've just been talking about. The Jews are giving Paul grief because he's not doing it like they're accustomed to doing religion. And one of the things that they accuse him of, they do in chapter 3 and by implication in chapter 6, you're teaching people they can just do whatever they want to. There aren't any laws anymore. Now, that was ridiculous, and Paul points out. But this helps us explain something about why they would think that. Okay, last part of chapter 5, somebody want to give that to us? Romans, talking about the law, talking about grace, talking about as law. Go for it, Roger. Thank you. When the law of Moses came in, was there need for more grace? This is not a trick question. When the law of Moses came in, was there a need for more grace? When the law of Moses came in, Rhonda, you're saying yes, aren't you? And you're right. Because if you've got 2,000 extra laws, there's 2,000 more things you might mess up. And if you got 2,000 more things you're messing up, you got to have more grace to cover that, right? Right. So one of the things about the New Testament as contrasted to the Old, yes, there are laws, and yes, there are things in the New Covenant, but we have passed on to fulfillment, more things of the heart, more things of maturity. Big boy and girl religion, if you will. And as a result of that, the Jews were saying, well, wait a minute. You're making it easy for these Gentiles. They don't have to do anything. Grace, grace, grace. That's all I hear you talking about is grace. I mean, come on now. They're going to think, well, he asked the question, doesn't he? Romans 6, coming right out of chapter 5. Shall we continue in what? That grace may abound. That's what he's being accused of. He's accused of teaching, well, you know, we got so much grace now, it doesn't really matter. Grace is going to take care of everything. Don't worry about it. Because of the difference in the covenants, they misunderstood what he was saying. Now, does anybody today think that? Have you ever run across that? Somebody who thinks, well, you know, God's grace will cover it. Now, that can be true and it can be not true, right? If it's just, well, don't worry about it. God's grace will cover it under any circumstances. No. Under what circumstances?
Walking in the light.
Faith. That is the circumstances. If we walk in the light, he is in the light. We have fellowship one with another. The blood of Jesus, his son, cleanses us from how many sins? All of them. But we're walking in the light. So Paul didn't say, don't worry about it. God's got it covered. Just because we don't have as many specifics in the New Testament to violate, and we don't, doesn't mean that God has suddenly said, it doesn't matter. Continue in sin that grace may abound. So the difference in the covenant is not an encouragement to sin at all. So one of the things that we need to understand, Paul's explaining this to his Jewish friends who are getting a lot of difficulty understanding what's going on because they want to, that there's a difference. Now, that said, and here's where we get into something I think is very important. I'll mention two or three things here. One of them is, under the old covenant, when did the Jews first get that law from Moses? And again, not a trick question. Sinai. What's just happened before they get that law? Got out of Egypt. Exodus. Okay. Are they a real tight-knit, special religious people at that point? How long does it take them to murmur? About 7 seconds, I think. And did they stop? No. You got a whole generation that's dying in the wilderness because of that. Okay, that's pretty severe stuff. Because God is long-suffering. They get into Canaan. What kind of land is Canaan? A real peaceful place? Nice, real friendly place. Come on in. Good to see you. We've been waiting for you. Are the people in Canaan really good people? No. What kind of people are they? Gross idolatry. Horrible things. Among most of them, prostitution was considered a way of worship. That's pretty bad. And you know what? They sacrificed their children. And you know what? It wasn't even a nice little tidy, oh, let's got to kill him quick, don't want him to suffer thing. They had this god named Molech. And they'd make representations of Molech out of iron. And they would build a fire underneath where they would lay the babies. And it would be white hot and they'd lay the babies on there. Is that gross or what? So you're going to a wild and woolly place with a wild and woolly people, right? Do you need a lot of restraining things going on to kind of keep you from going nuts? What if you didn't restrain a 5-year-old? See, I think you know what's happening with that one. Do you tell 5-year-olds don't play in the street when you're going out to get your car? Wait a minute! Cars out here. How many don'ts you have for 5-year-olds? Bunch of don'ts. Now, you don't want those don'ts to continue till they're 25, do you? Man, we got us a problem, don't we? But when they're 5, it's just really necessary because they're immature. And you got to spell it out in black and white. And they're going to ask you a lot of times why. You know what, later you might be able to explain it to them if they haven't already figured it out. At the time, why is usually beyond their comprehension. It's like a do what I say. Don't go in the street, okay? I can tell you because cars will hit you and everything like that, but it may not mean as much to you. Just don't do it. How many saw little Maddie reading the scriptures on Facebook today? Anybody see that? If you're friends with Holly, go to Holly's page. You got to see this. She's out. And so something happens. And Maddie, though a sweet girl and often quite obedient, has decided that she doesn't want to do something that her mother has told her to do. So her mother says, the Bible says, you're supposed to obey your parents. And so, being a precocious child, she says, where is that? And she tells her. And so, you go, and there she is with her Bible. And she starts reading it. Obey your parents. And she stops. She says, just like Mama said. And she finishes reading it, and she says, yes, that's it. Okay. That's kind of like our children do, right? You know, okay, it really is in there. I'm convinced. Now, we may have to repeat that a time or two. But there's a lot of things to keep the Jews from getting involved in idolatry and the things that the people of land are doing. They're not to marry people from the land, because what will come in with their usually wives? Idolatry. Did that ever plague them? All the time. So there are all kinds of rules to keep them from getting into idolatry. Now, here's another thing. Sometimes, how many major feasts are there in Israel? There's a fourth that's not a major feast, but it's very important. Day of Atonement. How many annual feasts are there in the Law of Moses for Israel?
Three.
Okay. All of those are associated with a particular kind of phenomenon. What? Be careful. Crops. Harvests. Guess where the pagans had theirs? Crops. Harvest. So as a way of offsetting that, God gave them, in close association but not exact, harvest festivals to remember certain things biblically, spiritually, in their relationship with God. So there's some of the, what's going on there. You can do this, but you're not going to do it the way they do it. You're going to do it this way. Okay? So all of that's trying to keep them from... There's a rule. You're not supposed to eat a kid boiled in its mother's milk. Y'all ever done that? It's a good thing I told you, right? Because, you know, you might run out and, hey, why don't we boil a kid in his mother's milk? Well, why would you have a law like that? Because that's part of the pagan religion. And we're trying to keep them away from the pagan religion. So there's certain things that you say, what? Well, that's what they're doing for the wrong reasons in their idolatry. So God says, I'm going to tell you not to do it. Don't go there. He's got all of that. Now, we still live in a world where they're pagans, right? People who do stuff they're not supposed to do. Is that right? Have you noticed that? Of course you have. So why don't we have all those little things? You know, when I was on St. Vincent in 1969, close to where the campaign was this year, right across the way. And I experienced this with my grandmother. You were not supposed to go to the movies. Now, there's some movies you don't need to go to. But I may have mentioned it. Some of you may remember me mentioning this. The big dilemma when I was on St. Vincent was, guess what movie came to town? To a town, to an island, that you're not supposed to go to the movies if you're religious. Yes, I'm talking about Charlton Heston. I'm talking about the Ten Commandments. And so three of the preachers come to me and they say, Edwin, can we go? thanks a lot. I appreciate that. And so I said, well, you know, you got an influence thing going here and all that, but, you know, I'm going to tell you, there's nothing wrong with going to see Charlton Heston and Ten Commandments except for the fact that you'll lose your influence and you are a preacher, so probably not a good idea. But people say, my grandmother, who somehow or another, I don't know how, I wish I would have asked her, knew how to play rummy. Growing up in a household that couldn't have cards in the house, where did she learn that? And I moved to Carnes, and we moved there in 1986. And I ran across some people who played rook, okay? And y'all play rook? They used a rook deck to play rook. Imagine that. You can play rook without a rook deck, but it's a lot easier with a rook deck. And they loved, I mean, they'd get together, they'd have rook parties and all this kind of stuff and everything. Well, There were some other folks who liked to play canasta. And when the Rook people found out that we were playing canasta, they said, "Ooh, you're using spot cards. It's okay if you use Rook cards with numbers, but you can't use spot cards," because they use spot cards to gamble. They use Rook cards to gamble too. But you see what I'm talking about? There's not a lot of that kind of stuff in the New Testament. And it's not because there aren't things that we need to be careful. We don't need to gamble, but we don't need all this stuff like that, because we're not children, right? You know what happens if you treat people like children? What do they act like? Children. How are you going to get them to act like adults? You increasingly start giving them responsibility and expecting them to act like adults. There's some of that in the Old Testament, but considering the circumstances and the environment and all of this, God's just trying to keep them from making a total mess of themselves in the midst of all of this. But when he gets to the New Testament, he puts a premium on something that, while it's a part of the Old Testament, it's still essential in the New Testament. And that's maturity. The New Testament is written to people who are mature, who are supposed to get mature. Job one, when you become a Christian, is to become mature so you can start having a relationship with God like big boys and girls, which takes you into all kind of things you can't take somebody into if you're doing, don't get out in the street now, and don't drink water before you go to bed, and all these things. I mean, how many of them are there? Because if you've got to do that, there's a lot of other things you can't do. If you keep people on that level, there's a lot of things you can't do with them. And God wants to do things with folks. He's got a plan that requires people to grow up. And so the first order of business under the new covenant is to grow up and be mature. That didn't mean God wasn't interested in it back then, but he absolutely insists on it now. You can't do New Testament stuff unless you grow up. You just can't simply do it. We've got a worldwide mission. The Jews didn't have a great commission. They're not being told to go out into the world and convert people to Judaism. No, but we are told to do that. In this complicated, complex world, with all the things that are out there, if you're going out there, you better be mature. Because what's going to happen if you're not? I mean, we can guard and protect you and keep you at home and keep the doors closed and don't have a TV and don't play cards and all this, and until your parents die and you wonder, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? But that's not the way it's supposed to be. Okay, Ephesians 4. We're going to wind down with this. And this is why it's so important for every Christian to grow up. And God doesn't have an option. Okay, we got a grow-up option. Some of you can have that. The rest of you can just, you know, don't go out playing the street and stuff like that. Dwight. What was the long-term plan on St. Vincent to mature the Christian? Just forget it. Okay, let me ask a person who's been there recently. Our man, right back here. Are they still not able to go to movies?
I don't know.
You don't know?
I don't know. Never asked
them. I bet they can go now.
I've seen
a movie. They probably burned them all down. Bless their hearts. Makes it easier, doesn't it?
You're wrong.
Yeah, at some point, where do you stop the things and say, let's grow up and make some Ten Commandments is okay. No, that, and they said, well, yeah, that makes sense. Of course we can go to this. Of course we can't go to that. Because that's how adults think, right? You tell your children where to go and where not to go. At some point, you're not going to be able to tell them that, so you want them to grow up so they can make good decisions, right? Right? Okay, Ephesians 4. He's given gifts to men, and he's given some as, what, apostles? Prophets, evangelists, pastors, and really should be pastors who teach. Now, that's the miraculous age. These are the teaching offices. We still have two of them. We still have preachers, evangelists. We still have elders, shepherds, pastors. For what purpose? Equipping the saints for what? Work of service. What was the work of service as a Jew? You had to learn about the temple. You had to learn about sacrifices. You had to learn about clean and unclean. You had to learn about dietary laws. You had to learn about all kind of things like that, right? Now we're going worldwide. We've got a big boy and girl mission. So, equipping the saints for the work of service. Yeah, he talks about that. He talks about, till we all arrive, what kind of maturity? What's the basis of maturity that he talks about next? Measure and stature which belongs to the fullness of Christ, the knowledge of Christ to a mature man. Okay. And we're not to be what? Children tossed here and there by every wind of doctrine. Children get tossed, don't they? I mean, you send a child out into this complicated world that we live in and ask them to go out and try to convert people, and they're still a child, and they're going to chew them up and spit them out, right? Not a kind place out there. So he says, rather than being subject to that in your immaturity, as children are, he says, speaking the truth in love, what? Grow up in all things unto him who is the head. Even Christ. Yeah, but that's not the end of it. Verse 16. It goes beyond me and you being mature. He's got a whole lot more involved with this. This is where we really got to be mature, where we really got to be big boys and girls, where we really got to be able to act like adults instead of like children, because he wants us to all work together. There are things about children the Bible says we're to be like. There are things about children the Bible says we're not to be like. And one of the things that we're not to be like is children squabbles. You ever seen a children squabble before? Sure you have. If you had more than one child, child squabble. My favorites. He's touching me. He's looking at me. Trips. You hope they'll rise above that at some point, do you not? Right. And they do. They do. So that which every joint supplies, the proper working of each individual part. We got to know how to be mature and make mature decisions in this world we live in, to live the Christian life, to be a light, to be people who are going out to win other folks. But we got to learn how to work together in maturity and not have every little childish immature thing that comes up saying, well, I don't know about that. That was my child imitation there. But that's kind of what it looks like. How many things throw us off in congregational work? Silly little things. You know, we're talking about the second mile in the Sermon on the Mount to Jews, and here are Christians who can't even seem to figure out that going the first mile would be a nice place to start. He didn't ask me right. They didn't ask me at all. They asked me to do this or that. This or that isn't what I wanted to do. I know that never happens, but it might. So God has a plan in the new covenant that's universal. It's worldwide. It's different from the Jewish plan where let's just keep you from getting into idolatry. And yeah, you got some chances to grow spiritually. The Psalms represent some of that, but it's the things that people thought. But this, we're going to let you loose now. We're going to turn you. One of the things that fascinates me has been reading about what happens to our young people when they go off to the university. We sometimes talk about what do we talk about when our children go off to the university? What do people get all about? We lose our children when they go to the university, the evil university. And a university is not a Christian institution, and I know that. I went to Auburn, whoa, and survived relatively unscathed, as a matter of fact. War Eagle. I got to teach a class at Auburn, in a sociology class, on the Christian perspective of marriage. I got to have Bible studies with instructors and students because they were heathens and they wanted to hear about Jesus. There were more heathens than when I went to a Christian school. Not that there weren't heathens at the Christian school, mind you, but the fields were ripe for harvest. But you had to be a big boy or girl to do that without being, you know, sucked into it. And so, you know what studies have shown? We don't lose our young men and women when they go off to the university. We never had them. God never had them. Christ never had them. Few exceptions. They weren't mature enough to handle it. Which means what? We got a preparation problem, right? If it's not the university, it's the world. We might as well prepare them to deal with stuff, right? Well, that's what the New Testament does. It's a jungle out there. People have got all these things they're going to want to trick you with and everything. So grow up. So you can look at that and say, no, we're not falling for that. The New Covenant emphasizes and puts a premium on that. And that is one of the key differences between it and the Old Covenant. That said, we still got to do that. Just because it says it doesn't mean we're going to do it. So if we don't get into Christ-likeness and being changed and being able to work together and play. You know, there was a thing on report cards. Remember when they did stuff like this? Plays well with others. Remember that? There was some little girl who always played well with everybody. And it was like, oh, man. Because your mom's always, why can't you be like Susie over there? But we need to play well with others. All right. It's about time for us to get started again. Thank you for staying with me for this long.